This is Patsy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Make sure you check out my new and fancy webpage. It's radio-joyonpaper. I don't think you have to say www anymore. Everybody knows that. So it's just radio-joyonpaper.com. And I have a lot of interesting and exciting changes to my webpage, including a blog, information about that writers need. I have some interviews there with our legal eagle, Bill Larson, who's going to be here, by the way, next week. So if you have a question about your intellectual property rights, make sure that you send me an email, and you can do it right there on my new website. But right now I'm going to turn to my guest today, who this is always so exciting. I love to have agents on, and I am particularly happy to have this agent on because she is somebody that I get so many questions about foreign rights, and so I was so excited when Taryn Fagerness agreed to be on today, and so I just want to welcome her. And are you there, Taryn?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Taryn. Well, that's great. I'm so happy. Are you all nice and rested after your vacation in Hawaii?
Yes, I am. It was very nice. I went to Kauai for 1 week, and the sand was between my toes. It was great. And now I'm back in Washington, and everything is frozen here.
Well, we're very happy here in Florida that we had our horrible 3 weeks of weather where we were freezing and we had to turn our heaters on in our house. But now it's back to our glorious, glorious weather here. And so we're so happy. I have in the studio with me, because tomorrow is, of course, Valentine's Day, I have in the studio with me an author whose name is Kelly Abel. She writes romance fiction. And so she's here. She's going to join me later on. Just say hi, Kelly.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Kelly. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Taryn.
Well, Taryn, as I said, you know, authors are always asking me this question about foreign rights, and I thought, well, I just need to have somebody who really knows it, and you certainly do. Of course, you are well known. I was talking to Irene Goodman, and I asked her, you know, she is, of course, a very important agent in New York City, and I said, well, what do you do on vacation? I said, do you not read? Because, you know, she's reading all the time. And she said, that's all she does on vacation. Now, did you read when you were in Hawaii?
I did read when I was in Hawaii. I read a couple of books for work, but I did manage to read one book just for fun.
Okay, well, that's great. So tell us a little bit about your agency. You started it because, of course, you had already so much experience in foreign rights. So tell us about your agency. When did you start it? And just a little bit about it.
Gosh, so I started it in March of 2009. I kind of can't believe it's been that long. time flies. Previous to that, I was the in-house foreign rights person for the Sandra Dykstra Literary Agency out in Del Mar, California. And then I started my own agency. Basically, what I did was I sort of became freelance foreign rights. So now I work for a whole bunch of other agents and one publisher, and I handle all their foreign rights for the books that they represent.
Well, it is a very exciting area of being an agent because, unlike so many agents who actually don't get to travel to places, you get to do a lot of traveling.
I do. So I travel at least twice a year. I go to the Bologna Children's Book Fair in the spring, and I go to the Frankfurt Book Fair in the fall, in October, which is the largest international book fair in the world. There's also the London Book Fair, which I've been to. I go to BEA in New York sometimes, and I've also done some traveling just to individual countries. Like, I've been to Tokyo just to meet with publishers in their offices there. And some of those trips have been the most rewarding and sort of informational, because when you're at a book fair, you sit at a table and you meet with a new person every half hour. It's very crazy. It's like speed dating. But when I go to some of the countries just to, you know, sort of spend more time with publishers, I'm able to sort of absorb and get to know them and their market a lot better.
Well, you know, I always wondered what it was like for a foreign, you know, when you're dealing with all of these foreigners. Of course, they all speak English, but your job is to get the books translated into different languages. And what is the strangest language that you've now had a book translated into?
Oh, the strangest language. that's a good question. Well, I don't want to call any language strange.
Yeah, we won't say strange. Unusual.
I think the rarest. I've had some books translated in some of the local languages in India. Farsi, not a lot of books are translated into Farsi. I've done a couple of those. And I recently had an inquiry for the local language in Sri Lanka, which I didn't even realize was there, I hate to admit. But, so that's a first. That was a first.
Well, you know, Sue Grafton, you know, it's so hard to believe that she's gone. But when she was on the program, we were talking about, she was really excited. She said the funniest language that for her that her book was translated into was Bulgarian. And she always wondered, what did people think in Bulgaria about her, you know, story set in somewhere in California?
Yeah, I've definitely done some deals in Bulgaria, Estonia, Lithuania, Latvia, Serbia, Croatia.
Wow, that's exciting. Now, when you get as you said, you work with agents, so primarily, but agents will come to you, and then do you select the countries, or do you have an idea of which countries like what type of books, for example?
Yeah, so my agent clients will come to me, and they'll come to me with whatever book it is they, you know, would like me to sell foreign rights on. And in some cases, the book has no foreign rights potential. But in a lot of cases, the book does have some or a lot of foreign rights potential. And I would say, yeah, I have a general idea kind of what countries are looking for and what they like to buy. The Asian markets are very different than the European markets. I'll give you an example. Japan, it's a very specific market. They love steamy romance that features a duke, an earl, you know, historical regency type romance. They don't really go for contemporary romance, while a lot of the European countries will. They also love, on the other side of things, serious nonfiction in the categories of science, popular, psychology, sort of pop economics, business, and these kinds of nonfiction books. And that's very specific to their market. Then you look at a bigger market like Germany. Germany buys in almost any category.
Now, when you are dealing with these, it's always like a sub-agent overseas. Now, they, of course, are responsible for finding the translators. How often do you ever have a problem with the translations? Do anybody ever complain that the translations aren't right?
Yeah, so typically it's actually the publisher who will, they'll have like a stable of translators they like to use. They'll choose the translator for the book. And yeah, in some cases I have had people complain about translations. Usually, though, the author can't read any of the books that they have in translation. So, but they sometimes will hear from fans. I have had, like in Russia, I've had authors hear from fans who say, oh, the translation's really bad. So that's usually how they hear. But for the most part, we don't hear if the translation's any good or bad. In some cases, the author can read the language. And so I recently did a deal in France, where the author could read French, and she's currently reviewing the French translation of her book just to make sure she likes it.
So when, that's funny, you know, I was thinking, I had read a translation of a book in a little bit in another language, and I thought they didn't quite get our idioms, but it's not easy to translate some of our phrases into other languages.
I always wonder about some of those idioms. I remember a translator was translating a book, and they wrote to me because they had a question about the translation, and they wanted to know what flick your bic means, like the lighter.
Yeah.
Because remember how people used to do that? They don't even do it anymore. When you would go to a concert and you would, like, wave your lighter in the air. So I had to sort of explain this whole scenario and what a bic lighter was. I mean, how do you translate that? I don't know. I really admire translators for figuring some of this stuff out.
When you're overseas, and you meet all of these buyers, they already know companies what authors you're representing?
Yeah, so I do catalogs every spring and fall, and I'll send my catalogs out prior to going to the big book fair so they can look at my catalog ahead of time. But then at the book fair, I'll sit down with them and pitch them my favorite books from my catalog or whatever books I think might fit what they're looking for best.
Now, Kelly here, have you had some of your books translated yet, Kelly?
No, I haven't.
So but you want to.
I definitely want to.
You would like to. Because there is such an interest, I think, for readers in other countries. They are interested in America, and they are interested in books. So many in Europe, people read books a lot. You know, I was always, when I lived in England, everybody was reading. It wasn't... Sometimes I don't find as many people reading here as I did in Europe, because when I was in Europe, wherever I went, people were reading.
Yeah, Germany and some of the European countries especially, they're big, big readers. People read. It's part of the culture. For example, in Holland, every Christmas, basically everybody gives everybody else a book as a gift. That's just a thing they do there.
I've heard that.
Which I love. I love that idea.
It is a great tradition.
Well, it's a tradition that's always been in our family, too, and we have, a Finnish background, and so maybe it comes from that, too, because we just always give books. Everybody gives, it doesn't matter the age, old, young, we always gave books, and we always get books, and it's, I think it's such a wonderful thing. I have books that, are from... so many, I don't want to say how many years ago, but there they are, and people who are gone, and they've written something in the book, and I think it is a wonderful thing, and I always encourage people to give books as gifts, because they really are just a wonderful treasure to have.
They are, and they're easy to wrap, too.
This is true.
That's true, too.
And not too difficult to mail.
So when you're at these book fairs, tell us a little bit about the book fairs, because for those of us who haven't been to, I've never been to one of the big book fairs like the ones in Europe. Tell us about them.
Yeah, so the Frankfurt Book Fair in October, it's pretty much a week long. You go and you all have a table in what's called the Agent Center, but all the publishers will have big booths or small booths, I guess, depending on the publisher, all over the fairgrounds and different buildings. I'll sit at my table, and foreign publishers will come and meet with me every half an hour. And so I'll sit down in one half hour with an Indonesian publisher, and the next half hour with a Brazilian publisher, and the next half hour with a children's publisher from Germany. So you're constantly switching gears. And then, during my meeting, really, you kind of only have 20 minutes, because 5 of the minutes is like sort of small talk, or you're running from different, people are coming and going. And I'll talk about, I can usually fit in, anywhere from talking about 3 to 6 books, maybe. And also, I'm getting a sense of what they want. If I've never met with them before, I want to know what kinds of things they like to publish, because maybe they only publish mysteries, or maybe they only publish romance. So I want to get a read on what they're doing. I also meet with my co-agents. So I do use co-agents in a lot of countries around the world. And these are on-the-ground companies who help me submit the books to foreign publishers, and they'll help chase the money and do all that fun stuff. So I'll meet with them too, and I've been working with some of my co-agents now for over a decade, so it's really fun to see them. Every year I go, I kind of, it's almost like summer camp. You're there for a week, and it's a lot of work. I always lose my voice, but it gets more and more fun because you develop these relationships with people that you only see once or twice a year. So it's really neat. And then you make you make notes on what everybody wanted to see. And then after the fair, there's all this follow-up. So it's an enormous amount of work, but it's really rewarding. It's a lot of fun. And it's really exciting just to see thousands upon thousands upon thousands of people talking excitedly about books. I mean, it's a really infectious environment. And I wish authors could see a glimpse of it, because if they knew how much effort people were putting in to trying to sell their books overseas, I think they would just, be dazzled, because it's really cool. I mean, it's kind of a hidden part of publishing in a way, but then you go to the fair and you're like, this isn't hidden at all. But I think for authors, you know, who are just, you know, typing away on their side of things and they don't see it, it would be neat for them to see.
Well, I think it sounds exciting. I have always thought that being a literary agent is like a dream job, because you just get to read. And I mean, I've read over 10,000 books. I know that because I had at one point 6,000 books, and that was actually less than half what I've read. So, you know, that is a dream job to me.
Yeah, well, I kind of joke that my job is all day long I get to talk about books. Then in the evenings I do the reading.
Now, most writers, when they sign a contract with an agent, are they signing away also the foreign rights at that time, do you think?
So when they do an agency agreement with their agent, it'll lay out in there how the agent handles the foreign rights and what the commission is and all that stuff. So then some agents, if they're a big agency, they'll have an in-house foreign rights person, which is like what I used to be at the Sandra Dykstra agency. Or they'll use a freelance person. So all my clients use a freelance person. That's me. And some agents, they may not really want to deal with foreign rights, in which case they can sell foreign rights to the U.S. publisher, and then the U.S. publisher will handle the foreign rights.
And then, there is a set commission that an agent takes from the foreign rights too, just like any agency agreement.
Yeah, typically 20-25%. I think sometimes it can even be a hair more, but usually 20-25%.
Because it is a big task to get out there and sell all of these.
It's a big task, and there's other people involved when it comes to foreign rights too, like co-agents, and they'll take part of that. They'll take part of that 20-25%.
And what are you finding in the in the field? Are they selling more hard copies or paperbacks or Kindle or electronic versions of foreign books?
Yeah, good question. So the ebook market is still really in development in most parts of the world. Most countries really are not selling many ebooks. At this point in time, pretty much every country, when they acquire the foreign rights for your book, they'll take the ebook rights and, you know, you'll get a royalty on that. But they really won't utilize those rights, or if they do, they'll sell very few. So in a lot of countries, the ebook market is only 1-3% of all the book sales. But in places like the UK and Germany, that number is rapidly increasing. The UK is now about equal to what the US sells in ebooks, and Germany is quickly on the rise, especially in those categories like genre fiction, fantasy, romance, this kind of thing, which it's the same as true for the US. I mean, romance really led the way in the ebook sphere. And now that's happening in places like Germany. So now in Germany, I am doing ebook only deals, which is the first territory I've seen that happen in besides the UK. And I suspect over time, I may see that in other territories as well.
And generally speaking, it's difficult for an author to deal directly with a foreign rights agent, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, a foreign co-agent, I think they, in some cases, they might deal directly with authors, but usually they want to work with another agent who can hand over to them a whole stable of authors.
Yeah, it's difficult. I know that several indie authors have you know, approached. I know even Kelly here would love to have her books translated, but you have to then go through the regular agency route, which is not always easy either. But sometimes smaller publishing houses also use your services, right?
Yeah, so at the moment I just handle rights for one publisher, and that's Patagonia Books, but I've handled rights for some other publishers in the past as well.
And so they can then take it through the whole process, because it is a big process of having to have somebody like you sell it and then go through the... It's, at least you don't have to edit your books in a foreign language.
I know, yeah.
But it is...
There's a lot of people involved, though. And, you know, I've always said publishing is the business of relationships. You know, so I've built relationships with my foreign co-agents, with foreign publishers. They've learned to trust me when I say, this is a book you need to pay attention to. And I do everything from, you know, looking at the deal and negotiating the terms of the deal, to reviewing every contract, to helping authors with tax forms, because there's all kinds of funky tax stuff when you're dealing in foreign countries, to going to the fairs, creating catalogs, creating almost weekly updates with, you know, exciting information about the books that I handle. So I'm doing all that stuff. And I try to make my co-agent's job as easy as possible, so it's as easy for them as possible to sell my books into their territories.
Now, I know that when they translate a book, they also, in most countries, they change the covers. Have you had any interesting stories about the changing of covers? Because I know that, who was telling me? I think Lee Child was saying that in some country, he didn't like the cover. You know, it sometimes, they have the right to do that, I guess.
They do, yeah. So a lot of times, I would say the majority of the time, foreign publishers will change the cover art. And this is because the American cover art, the style, design, graphics of it just won't work well in their market. And if you think about it, like the difference between the style that you see in Japan and the style you see in the U.S., I mean, a Japanese cover would not work in the U.S. either. We would change it if we were going to translate a book from Japan. That's kind of that's an easy way to see a difference when people think, oh, well, my book's being published in the UK, that's an English-speaking country, why aren't they using my US cover? Well, the UK has a very different style for their books as well, and they will often change the cover there, even though it's still an English-language book. I haven't had too much trouble with covers. I have had authors not like their cover art. A lot of times they don't like it in Russia. Russia kind of has a style that people don't tend to like. But, you know, the publisher always convinces them, well, we've already sent this to our marketing team and they love it. And we know this book is going to work really well in our market. And so the author usually says, okay, fine. sometimes, I remember once there was a book, it was a book set in China, and they had put like a person in a kimono on the cover. And so the author was very upset, and we got them to change that because it just wasn't accurate to the book. But usually authors don't have approval. A lot of times authors don't even see the cover until the book has been published. You know, a Russian publisher might be publishing 2,000 books a year, and they're just not going to get the author's feedback. They're just going to plow forward and publish the book.
What?
So, but it is really fun to see, especially when your book has sold to a lot of foreign territories, it's really fun to see what kind of covers everybody puts on the book.
Well, I know Clive Cussler was telling me that when his books first started being, you know, translated into different countries, for his American books, he had a very specific, he always wanted the rights to the cover. He wanted to do it exactly the way he wanted. And he said he would also find, you know, they do all sorts of funny things. And so he actually made an entire wall of his covers, you know, just the books, you know, standing up with all the different covers. But then after, I guess after he wrote, I don't know, like, what's he up to, like 87 books or something, and translated in 30 languages, you need a barn to have, you know.
Need a lot of walls.
Exactly. But I think it is fun for an author. I know that many authors who have, you know, it's just, they have those books lined up there in those different languages. It's a big thing in an author's life.
Yeah. And when I do a foreign deal, the author always gets a certain number of free copies. So whether you want them or not, you're going to get 5 copies of your Estonian edition, and whatever what you do with them is up to you.
Yeah, that's funny. Now, when you, of course, now you're well known now in the whole business, because when I talk to people, they you know, mention you all the time. Now, I don't know, do you still offer free internships for people interested in foreign rights, learning about foreign rights?
I do. Yeah, I have a year-long internship once every year, and I start looking for new interns in May.
Ah, okay. Well, and it's there in Washington, right?
It is in Washington. I do require in-office hours. So anybody who wants to do the internship has to come to my office in Tacoma, Washington, at least one day a week. And then there's also some sort of homework that I give my interns that they do outside the office.
Can you imagine what it was like to do foreign rights before we had the internet?
Yes. I kind of have an inkling. And the book fairs, they're still very important, but the book fairs before there was the internet was really kind of the only way to learn about the new books all around the world. And they would have these like copy rooms where people were frantically Xeroxing manuscripts, and they would read them in their hotel rooms overnight and make offers at the fair. And it was kind of, and I mean, people still might make offers at the fair, but there's not so much pressure to have to do things at the fair and get your hands on the physical papers of a manuscript at the fair. And people would fax a lot. It was kind of crazy. But now, thank goodness, there's the internet.
So you were there before the internet.
I first started at the Dykstra agency, we definitely had the internet and the capability of sending stuff. But Sandy had been in the business already for a number of years, so she was there when it was faxing and Xeroxing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I learned kind of what it was like from her.
Well, I think that, you know, as I said, it's a wonderful, wonderful job that you have, and you do a great service for authors. And I know that everybody appreciates, you know, the type of and the hard work that goes into having to deal with so many, many countries. And it's exciting. And I think that, I think there might be some people out there who'd be willing to move to Washington just to work with you for a year, because it would be a fantastic education and into a very, I think, one of the most fascinating areas of the book publishing world.
Yeah, it's fun. I try to make the internship, you know, engaging, and try to really teach my interns as much as I can. So if anybody is interested, there's information on my website, which is just www.taryn-faggersagency.com.
Okay. Well, Taryn, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a joy to talk to you. And now I will be able to tell people a bit about it, and I will send them to your, to find an agent, because they have to find an agent who's going to then find you. And one thing, now, of course, you were an agent before, just a regular literary agent, right?
Yeah, I did do some regular literary agenting before, and I still actually do handle a couple of my own clients on the regular agent side.
Okay. Well, I think it was just a pleasure to talk to you today, Taryn, and I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper.
Yeah, thank you so much, and great to meet you too, Kelly.
Great to meet you, Taryn.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
Okay, we're going to take a commercial break, and then we're going to come back and talk to Kelly about her romance books, because she has, now we're talking about covers. I have to talk to her a little bit about some of her romance covers. This is a very fascinating subject to me. Okay, take it away, Ed.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed, it's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry my pillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
My Pillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special. Go to MyPillow.com or call 800-480-1941.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY. P-A-T-Z-I.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back with my guest in the studio, Kelly Abel, who specializes in romance fiction. And so I'm so happy to have you here the day before Valentine's Day.
Thank you.
Everybody's interested in romance.
It is a great time of the year for us romance writers.
It is. So tell us, you know, I was looking at some of the covers of your books when we were talking about covers.
Yes.
You have some really hunky guys.
Yeah.
Woo.
There's probably one in particular that you're thinking of.
I am.
I posted that one on Facebook because I'm having it done in audio as well as whether it was a book. And my son saw it and he's like, Mother. He said, did you have to post that? Hey, you know what?
Yeah,
get your attention, right?
Yeah. Well, it does. Yes. I have to turn off my screen, you know, because I can't look at that. It's like the time I interviewed Douglas Brunt. I put his picture up and his Facebook picture, mm-hmm. and he's so good looking that I started giggling. I mean, I'm talking here to a New York Times bestselling author.
Awesome.
But he's gorgeous. What can I say?
And
you know, you get silly. Now you didn't get to select that guy yourself, did you?
No.
That's a shame. Most of these are. I don't know. If I was a best-selling romance author, I think there would be a time where I'd come and say, let me have the selection. I think let's do a little runway here. You know, and I get to select the guy.
That cover was made with a stock photo. So.
Yeah, I know. But I like those. You know,
there are some cover models locally, though, that you can use, and they're very handsome.
Yeah.
They show up at book fairs, and they're fun to meet.
Yeah. Oh, yes. At the Book Babes.
The Beach Babes Book
Beach
Blast.
Beach Babes Book Blast. One of the authors from New York had three.
Yes, brought three cover models with
cover
her.
Models. I mean, did she get attention?
Oh, yes. Definitely.
Of course.
She got attention in her own right.
Her books got attention.
But the fellas didn't hurt either.
Oh, no. I mean, it was a big ballroom, but I made a beeline across to the corner she took over just to have my selfie done with
there. There you go.
I don't know if I had any selfies taken with the authors now that I think about it.
Okay, you know, now I'm her.
I'm sorry. That's where I met you.
I'm kidding. Yes, it is where we met. It absolutely
and
is.
I didn't do a selfie with you, but I know I did a selfie.
Well, you know what? That's okay. You're forgiven.
Would you travel with your cover model?
I don't. Probably not. I mean, if they were local and I used them on covers and whatnot, and they wanted to get their name out there, I would invite them definitely to, you know, to a book fair or something like that. But I don't know that I'd travel across the country.
No, that's a little overdoing it. But tell me, you love to write romance.
I do.
Romance in your heart, I guess.
I do have romance in my heart. I'm a multi-genre author, but it seems to be the readers really enjoy the contemporary and paranormal romance, you know, more than some of the other things. But, you know, I'm one of those authors that just kind of writes what comes to me, and most often that's romance. So uh-huh. I was working on a new trilogy that I was just working or building the outline for that I plan to submit to Hallmark. So it's going to, you know, that one's going to be a lot of fun to put together.
And, you know, when you've come out, your first book was a romance?
It was romantic suspense.
Romantic suspense.
Sealed in Lies, yes.
And so how do you draw upon your life?
Well, that one, that story actually came from a real news story in the state of Virginia where a senator's wife had been, a burglar broke into the house and he kidnapped her and did not know who she was at the time. And once he found out who she was, he was quick to let her go. And so my mind started working and I'm like, what if she didn't want to go? What if this was her ticket out of a, you know, a really bad situation?
Uh-huh.
And the story just built from there. So it's kind of a CIA espionage, romantic suspense, you know, type. The main character, the hero, is an ex-SEAL who is now working for the CIA in a drug cartel, and he discovers some things, and she's got some of the answers.
And so, now that book was released when?
That was originally released in 2010, but I just re-released it this week, actually, because I got the rights back from the publisher, and we did some fancying up on the, you know, it wasn't probably edited as well as it really could have been. So we had it re-edited and new cover on it, and now it's back out there. So I'm real proud of that book. I love that book.
Oh, that's great. Well, that's what happens sometimes when you've had a book published, and then you know, if it hasn't taken off at that point, you can get it back and reissue
it. That's one of the great things about electronic books and ebooks. I think that really gives an author an opportunity to dress up or dress down, you know, a particular book. In that particular case, it wasn't selling well with that publisher, and I think a lot of it had to do with the cover, which, again, I didn't have any control over. But this time I did. And, you know, so I think it's got a better cover. I think it's better edited, and it'll be, you know, it's just a lot more attractive, I think I would say. And then I've also got a short story that goes along with that, and then a second book in the series that'll be re-releasing over the next month or two.
Okay, great. We're going to come back and talk about that. We're going to run a book buzz first, and this is a new one from Rita Moreau about one of my favorite authors who is going to be on March 1st. So let's run that first, and then I'll be back with Kelly.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz. And A Doppelgangster is the exciting science fiction and fantasy second novel of the Esther Diamond series by Laura Resnick. Here's the buzz. Esther Diamond, a New York actress, is resting between roles by working as a singing waitress at a Manhattan mob restaurant because, well, wise guys tip well. Then duplicated gangsters appear, bullets start flying, and it's up to Esther and her friend Max the Magician to fight evil by stopping the gang war before it starts killing the wrong people. And if she has time, maybe Esther can actually keep a hot date with her hunky detective friend Lopez, who doesn't believe in magic yet. Laura Resnick introduces a colorful cast of gangsters and their associates as she spins a witty, fast-paced mystery around her convincingly self-absorbed chorus girl heroine. Unplug all your devices and settle down for a fast and funny read with Laura Resnick's Doppelgangster. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. Hey, for more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
Okay, that was fun. I love Rita Moreau. She's doing a great job with these. Yeah. Isn't it nice? And the wonderful thing is now, this was a review for Laura Resnick. And Laura Resnick is the daughter of Mike Resnick, who is the most award-winning sci-fi author ever. I mean, he's won the Nebula Prize 5 times, nominated, I think, 30 times. Anyway, so much. They are just a fantastic team, and so they are both going to be on the program on March 1st. And
I have to listen in on that one.
Yeah, absolutely, because I love Mike Resnick. He writes both sci-fi, and he also writes he writes some of the funniest books. And Laura's books, which are really so delightful. She has also paranormal, but they are mysteries. They're it's rare that a book really can make me laugh out loud. And I'm reading this Doppelgangster, and I'm laughing, and I'm laughing.
I'll definitely check that out, because I do enjoy a book that will make me laugh.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful?
It is rare, too. It is.
And then, of course, a book that just makes you feel sexy is also a very nice thing. And that's what your books do.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah. So, now, you know, it is so nice to be able to just put some joy into people's lives.
It is. And that's why I do it. You know, it's not for the money. It's not for, you know, of course that's nice.
Yeah.
That keeps things going. But I do enjoy, the best thing a reader can tell me is, I stayed up all night reading your book. You know, and I'm so sorry for your lost sleep, but that makes me happy. Because then I know that and that's what I try to do, is write those page turners and, you know, the ones you just can't put down. So if a reader tells me that, then that's the ultimate compliment for me.
Well, I know I love, Saving Shenanigans. And then when I was reading that, which is one of your books that just, I mean, I started reading that, and I couldn't stop that. I just love that book.
I love those sisters.
They are just great. We have time, so tell us a little bit about that one, and then let's talk about some of your other romances.
Okay, Saving Shenanigans is a trilogy about three sisters whose father dies and leaves them an Irish pub in debt to the mob for $250,000. So the first sister, Maeve, in the first book has to get the pub back from the mob, and she meets her love interest, you know, going through that whole thing, and he's got some secrets, and, you know, when she finds out what those are, it nearly wrecks the whole thing. Then the second sister, Meg, has a secret from a boyfriend she never thought she'd see again, and then she does. And the third sister, Mara, is an executive chef. And all three sisters kind of separated and went their own ways to get away from their father. And so they come back for the funeral, and now they're all back together. And Mara was an executive chef in New York, and she comes back thinking, oh, great, now I can take the pub and turn it into a bistro. But the sexy bartender thinks his burgers and wings are just fine. So each book has a little bit of element of suspense. The second book involves Meg. The sister has ovarian cancer, and all the proceeds of that book go to the National Ovarian Cancer Coalition, and it has a happy ending. So, you know, good old Meg comes through, and I just love the way the three books flow together. And there's another character in there. Her name is Hope, and she owns the bed and breakfast in town. And this is all set in Monticello, Florida, which is a real place, and it's a wonderful little historical town. If you've never been there, you really ought to check it out. It's a lot of fun. And Hope, you know, runs the bed and breakfast, and you get to know Hope. And I've had several readers, you know, contact me and say, oh, I want Hope's story. So, folks, it's in the works.
Well, that's all you have to tell Kelly, and she'll get to work.
That's right.
Well, it's just, isn't it so much fun to be able to come out with all these characters?
Oh, it just gives me such joy. I really enjoy writing, and it's who I am. You know, I have a day job, and that's what I do, but a writer is who I am.
So. Yeah, well, it's nice to have a day job, and at some point you can retire from that, and then just
that's the plan.
That's the plan. It is a good thing. Writers do need to have that a plan, because it isn't easy. So far, you're all indie, right?
I'm a hybrid. I have a couple books with some small publishers, but for the most part, I'm indie.
Yeah.
But I do have a couple with some small publishers, which are doing well, and I'm very happy with. So.
And as we heard from Taryn, she works primarily. I think at some point all of the foreign specialists, you know, might have. She said she has a few clients, and it is the connections.
Yes,
it is making these connections over time, and you never know. You might bump into Taryn at one of the
That'd
events
be fantastic.
Because she does attend. She does attend the conferences here in America, mm-hmm. and of course, it's very important for you. Have you been able to attend some of the conferences?
I have. I haven't been to New York's Book Expo, which is one of the ones that's on the list that I would really like to attend. That one's a big one.
Yeah, it is a big one.
Important one. And you get a chance to pitch there, and you know that's an awesome opportunity for any author. And with the Civil War historical, that we finally have got it done, and it's in edits right now. So that's the one I'm really interested in getting some foreign rights on, and it's very difficult to do, you know, as an indie author. I've looked into a lot of that, so I may be, you know, submitting that to agents. I've had agents before, and some worked better than others, and you know, so it, you know, I'm kind of, I know that's the way I have to go to make this work. So we'll see. You know, we'll see what happens with this particular book, and you know, I'll submit it to a couple of agents, and if they think there's a market for it and they're interested in it, then you know, we'll see and move forward.
Well, a great example of an indie author who self-published her book, Nancy Peacock. Mm-hmm. She self-published and didn't sell any.
That happened.
But 4 years later, she got an agent, mm-hmm. and Simon & Schuster re-released it,
awesome.
And it became a bestseller.
That's awesome.
So there is that hope out there. It's a combination of persistence and luck. Mm-hmm. But
well, and if you're selling well enough as an indie, a lot of times agents will approach you.
Yeah,
you know, and ask to be, you know, to read something that you have that. And sometimes they'll take what's already been published, and sometimes they want new stuff.
Yeah, they
material,
want new stuff, so. But that's all right.
That's right.
But they can tell Kelly new material, and she'll say, okay, so let
fire
me,
it right on out.
She's sitting down there, and she's going
right,
with, like gangbusters. because she certainly, just to see, you know, this is radio, but if you could see Kelly smile when she talks about her books, that it's pure joy.
It
absolutely
is.
Pure joy.
I love writing, and I love my characters, and it's just so much fun to escape. You know, I know, you know, readers read for the escape, and I write for the same reason. And it's a, you know, I do outline. I'm an outliner, but every now and then the characters will do what I call hijack the bus, and we'll go on a different path. And that's always fun when that happens, because you're like, wow, I didn't think about, ooh, I didn't think he'd react that way. Okay, let's go this direction. So it's a lot of fun when that happens, and you just kind of play with it and see where it goes. And usually, it, you know, it ends up making it a better story.
Okay, do you have a website you want people to visit?
I do. It's www.kellyable.com, and that's KellyAbell.
Okay, so KellyAbell.com, and as we said, I think we're just about to the point where we could stop with the www business.
True.
Because people know. I mean, where else are you going anymore?
That's true. Well,
you can just tell people. You don't have to say, just go to, and they know where you're what to do, because they can see your books there, and of course, wherever books are sold, Barnes & Noble, and of course, on Amazon, takes over the world.
No kidding.
I mean, you know, so you have to be on Amazon. But wouldn't it be exciting to see your books in another language?
It would be awesome, yeah. And I have some indie authors that I've spoken to that have cracked the code. I mean, there is a way to do it, and you can hire your own foreign translator and then, you know, have it sold that way. So, you know, that's not impossible.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm looking into those types of opportunities, but I'd really love to get into with some of the foreign publishers. I think that would be a much better way to...
Let somebody else handle all the hard work. because you want to do...
I want to write. I don't want to be fooling with all this.
Exactly. Well, are you going to be in any shows, any...
I have
thing coming up?
Just a couple things. I have a book fair down in Venice, Florida, that is March 24th. And I've been invited to a book fair up in Ontario, Canada in October, and I'm still trying to work out the details on that. But locally then in June, I will be at the Space Coast Book Fair, which is in Daytona, or right around Daytona, in June. I believe it's June 12th. I can't remember the date exactly, but.
Okay, so, well, they can see that on your website.
It'll be on my website,
and,
absolutely.
I just want to thank you so much. You said you have a book coming out in Audible?
The Guardians of Spirit Rock series is coming out in Audible. The first book, Secrets of a Wolf, is already out. And Cry of the Cougar, which is the guy with the nice pants.
Yeah.
or lack thereof.
What?
That one's coming out probably in about another month or so. And then the other two will be scattered throughout the rest of the year. So I've got two narrators that are doing that whole series, and they are fantastic. And I really enjoy listening to those stories.
Oh, I'm really fond of Audibles. I've been listening to quite a few lately, and it's fun. So that's what I want to tell everybody out there. All you have to do is start writing. And one day you will have your books in your hand, and you will have people listening to them on Audible, which is really exciting. Isn't that exciting?
It is exciting.
And you never know, maybe someday they'll be picked up, and you will see your words on the screen, and people will be saying, "You know, oh, wow, look at that.
I knew her when."
Exactly. So hopefully you'll get a deal with Hallmark, and that would be fantastic.
That would be awesome, yeah.
And that would be awesome, because you're a fantastic writer and a fantastic person.
Oh, thank you.
And
so
I want to thank you so much for joining me today.
It's always a pleasure. I really appreciate
you. You know, everybody have a very happy Valentine's Day. And it's a day, well, every day you should say something nice to somebody.
Absolutely.
And make people happy. But particularly tomorrow, right?
That's
true. You want to say happy Valentine's to anybody in particular?
Oh, I can say happy Valentine's Day to my husband, Troy.
Ooh, that's a good idea.
Yeah.
I mean, you know.
He'd be upset if I didn't do that.
And then I'll say happy Valentine's to that guy on Kelly's cover. No,
on the covers. All the cover models out there, happy Valentine's Day.
Exactly. And also to my wonderful husband. And also to Big Ed in the control room, and he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him, because he always is so sweet. And again, Kelly, thanks for
Thank
being
you.
Here. Bye-bye for now. Bye, everybody.